Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Becky Swager. Becky, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
As well you should be. We are here. This is another one of the rarely done taped, I guess we don't tape things, recorded in-person episodes of Random Trek. So we're sitting in my dining room table. Well, not in it, but at my dining room table discussing Star Trek. But before we discuss Star Trek, Becky, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a technologist, and I work for the federal government trying to improve the technology there. So, you know, it's a rewarding and difficult job, and I focus primarily on federal spending data. So when I'm not geeking out about that, I enjoy listening to music and enjoying the nature of my beautiful home in Western Massachusetts with my husband. I know many of your guests have various side projects that they are known for. I, however, have a number of failed side projects that I'm not known for, I will just fail to mention on your podcast.
Well, we met because of blogging at a time when personal blogging was a thing. That seems not to be the case really that much anymore.
Yeah, that actually makes me really sad. But I was thinking about that. It's probably been maybe 12 years. And you are the first person I met in real life through my blog.
Oh. Not the last, but the first.
Not the last. No, I mean I met my husband.
Well, that's true.
Through my blog.
I met my wife through blogging, not my blog in particular.
Right. I mean, we had this whole little blogging gang back in Philadelphia before everything got so niche, you know.
That's right.
If you were a Philadelphia blogger, you were in the club.
Yes. You just were blogging. That's all that you had to do. It could have been about anything, but you had to live in Philadelphia and have a blog. And that was it. It didn't matter. And we had a group of people that met. And I still know many of those people.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how we met. And then we went to, was that a Guster concert that we went to?
I think it was Guster, Rufus Wainwright.
Oh, Rufus Wainwright.
And one other band on Penn's Landing.
I was just interested in Guster, but because I like Guster. Although I think I've seen them enough in person. They have the same concert over and over again. But we're not here to talk about Star Trek yet. But those are my controversial Guster opinions. And if you disagree with me, feel free to send me an email. I like Guster. Don't get me wrong. Although they probably have a new album out that I've not heard. But anyway. So let's talk about Star Trek.
Yes, let's do that.
Are you a fan of Star Trek?
Yes, absolutely.
And how would you, on a scale, I have been trying to start this, but then I quickly forgot it, but now I've remembered again. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I know nothing about Star Trek, 10 being I have gone to a Star Trek convention dressed as a Star Trek character, how would you rate yourself as a Star Trek fan?
Well, you know, I think I disagree with the premise of your scale.
Let
me just say that. I mean, because I would rate myself probably high on the scale in terms of fandom, but not because I can quote a lot of random facts or have a Starfleet uniform in my closet, but just because the franchise itself is very meaningful to me for personal reasons.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I am very similar. Well, I have a lot of Star Trek stuff. But I've never been to a Star Trek convention, and I've never dressed as a Star Trek character. Not that I judge other people. I've gone through this again. I don't want to offend anybody. I'm all for people dressing up as Star Trek characters if you're so moved. Many Star Trek costumes, not flattering for a man of my size. And I've talked about this before. It'd have to be a Klingon, and that seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, that's a lot of makeup. That would take hours, I imagine.
Unless I'm like B'Elanna Torres, who comes up. She just has a slight wrinkled forehead.
Well, and also the Klingons on the original series weren't... That's true. An original series Klingon.
Well, the problem with that, though, and the problem with Klingons in general, is that it is very close to blackface.
Ah, yes.
I don't think I feel comfortable doing that without the cranial ridge, because then you can be like, okay, he's a Klingon.
No, that's a fair point.
Without the ridges, it could be borderline deeply offensive to many people.
Yes, yes.
So... Oh, we've gotten way off track already. So you have a deep personal connection with Star Trek. What is your favorite Star Trek series?
Oh, the original series, of course. And it goes to your whole theory that, you know, the original series that people were exposed to is the one that's their favorite. But growing up, my mom worked the second shift. So that meant that my dad was in charge of us at night. And what we did every night was he drove us home from his work, and we watched Star Trek reruns. It was in the original series was in syndication at that time. So that was our show. And I remember every night we'd be driving home in his little Honda Civic, and he would say, maybe tonight is the night when they're going to have the cling or the trouble with tribbles. And he's like, it's the best episode. He's like, this is the best thing you're ever going to see in your life. And we were young and impressionable, so we just believed him. And, you know, one night that actually happened. We drove home, turned on the TV, and the Trouble with Tribbles was on, and we thought it was hilarious.
It is a very funny episode.
Yeah, but my dad, you know, is who got me hooked on science fiction. We watched that series, and we watched Buck Rogers.
One is slightly better than the other, I think, and has had more lasting power. But
I noticed there's no Buck Rogers podcasts.
There probably are, actually. I don't know if there's a random Buck Rogers podcast, but well, Buck Rogers has a fine tradition in science fiction, right? It started off as a serial, I think, and comic strip, maybe. I'm not a Buck Rogers expert. I prefer Duck Dodgers, but that's just me. So, original series, favorite character in the original series, or just favorite Star Trek character, if your favorite character could be from another series, who am I to assume that?
Sure. I know you don't like Voyager, but I've been watching that recently.
Strong words. I don't like it as much.
Okay, I'm sorry. You don't like it as much. And, I mean, so Captain Janeway is just tremendous. Mm-hmm. So she is probably my favorite Star Trek character.
And what about Captain Janeway? Is it, well, I don't want to belittle this and just say just because she's a woman, she's your favorite character, but that must play a little bit into it, maybe. No? Oh, look at it. Becky, this is an audio podcast, but Becky is giving me a dirty look.
I am giving Scott a dirty look. No, I mean, of course. And yes, because she's a female captain. But, you know, she balances out everything so well. Because first of all, I mean, she kicks ass, right? Like, you don't mess with Captain Janeway. She is firm. You don't mess with her. She's strong. She's smart. But she also has this great humanity about her because she's realized that this is a bit of a different situation and she's going to have to be more than a captain to the crew. But she never lets that, you know, secondary aspect of her duty, like, get in the way of just being the strong leader that the ship needs. I mean, I think they portray that balance perfectly.
Yes, and I don't want to boil down, I don't want to say that Captain Janeway, the only defining thing about Captain Janeway is that she's a woman. But I was just saying, I've had many women guests who have pointed out Captain Janeway, which makes perfect sense because she is the most prominent female character probably in all of Star Trek. Second only, well, not even, I guess the second one would be Seven of Nine, probably. I'm trying to think of the female characters that are, I guess Crusher, a lot of people like Dr. Crusher. Mm-hmm. Deanna Troi, although I never really liked her. She was kind of wishy-washy. Many, many fine female characters, but Captain Janeway, I think, is the best female character in all of Star Trek, without a doubt. And just drop the qualifier female, she's one of the best characters in Star Trek, whatever your gender is. And this episode, there is a moment, so the episode we're talking about, you already know this, Muse, Voyager, Season 6, Episode 22. So this episode, you know, B'Elanna and Harry Kim are lost and nobody knows where they are, which is the definition of lost. And there's a scene which Chakotay comes into the ready room and tells Captain Janeway, you know, we still don't know where they are. And she is upset and they show her kind of turn and, like, you know, put her head down, and looks like she's really very upset because, you know, B'Elanna and Harry Kim are gone. And as that was happening, I was thinking about how they would portray that with other captains. So, like, Captain Kirk would not have this kind of, it was like maybe 3 seconds of, you know, Captain Janeway looking very worried. But I can't imagine Captain Kirk looking, he would just be angry, and he'd storm into the bridge and say, I want to punch somebody or something like that. Captain Picard would look kind of maybe vaguely uncomfortable and then talk to probably Beverly Crusher, who would act as his emotional side, right? Because he doesn't show emotion because that's not what Captain Picard does. He represses it because he has to be a strong authority figure, right? And I think Ben Sisko would probably yell at somebody or something. I like Sisko a lot, but he is a little hot-headed.
Right, but that's why I like Janeway, because she can be she doesn't need somebody to be the emotional side of her. She doesn't need that secondary character. Mm-hmm. She's everything in the same character, yet still manages to be a strong leader.
Right, and they don't make it seem like she's, you know, this stereotypical, like, hysterical woman who flies off the handle or whatever, and she can't be trusted because she's illogical. She is calm, cool, and collected, but she also has this, she's a fully realized character, right? She isn't just Because when there's a, you know, The Next Generation came out, there was a clear, mission to distance itself kind of from the original series. Not distance itself, but make its own show, right? So they split Kirk basically into two characters, right? So there's Riker and there's Picard. And so neither one of them are really fully fleshed out because they are two aspects of Kirk, who I think is a fleshed out character, but certainly not an introspective character.
No.
You can say many things about Captain Kirk. He's not known for his introspection. Although I guess Star Trek IV, he's a little introspective. But Janeway, I feel like she has the most... She's got, like, a normal life outside of Voyager. Of course, she's stranded in the Delta Quadrant, so we don't see that. But she has, like... I think in the first season, they vaguely mentioned she had a boyfriend at some point.
Yes, there was a picture of her boyfriend and her dog.
Mm-hmm. And all the other captains kind of... They don't have any relationships because their ship and their crew are their relationships. Of course, we're spending a lot of time talking about Janeway because she's a great character in this episode. She's on screen for maybe 3 minutes, if that. And she's mostly just concerned about things that are happening not on the ship. And Becky, I know you... I gave you this episode, and you emailed me back and said there's no space in this episode.
Yes, I was a little upset. I mean, I know that you generate the episode randomly. Mm-hmm. And I confess, I fell asleep the first 2 times I tried to watch this episode. Mm-hmm. And so finally to record this podcast, because you emailed and said, when are we recording this podcast? I said, I will be in Philadelphia. I am coming to your house.
So we gave you a bunch of coffee.
Yes. And then we watched the episode together.
And you didn't fall asleep. So that's good.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I think I finally got the gist of the episode. But yeah, it wasn't very Star Trek-y. And I feel like it was trying to be this thing about, you know, what the arts can be and the role of the arts in society. Mm-hmm. And that's all very good, but that's not really why I watched Star Trek.
And it was very strange episode. I feel like I say that all the time, but this episode in particular seemed to be strange. I liked some of the elements of it. There's a big, the arts, as Becky said, play a big part. And it opens with this kind of Greek chorus, and you're like, what the heck is going on? And then you quickly figure out they're telling a story of Voyager and how B'Elanna crash-landed on this planet. And it doesn't really make any sense. And then the playwright, I guess, goes off to the crash site, and there's B'Elanna. She's bound. And then you're like, oh! And then the episode starts, right? And this alien race in the grand tradition of Star Trek aliens looks alien. We know they're aliens because they have weird crap on their foreheads.
That's right.
That looks vaguely like Klingon weird crap on your forehead. I say that because B'Elanna Torres comes in later in this episode to a bunch of these aliens, and she's like hanging out with them, and nobody seems to think that it is unusual for her to be there.
Well, they say she's from across the
Southern Sea or something.
Yes,
right?
Right.
So I guess everybody there has different foreheads. Everyone's like, okay, that's cool. The level of this civilization, like the technological level, seems to be ancient, on par with ancient Greece, which is what they're obviously trying to go with the play. There's a chorus, and it's a kind of a stilted kind of play for our contemporary playwright, right, wouldn't have this chorus, and the playwright is in it, and he takes over, and the fourth wall is broken, which is not very much like ancient plays, but it's whatever. So it is clear they don't have warp capability. It's a pre-warp civilization in the parlance of Star Trek, which means that the Prime Directive is in effect. And
I wondered about that at the end there. are we going to talk? I mean, is it a spoiler if I say what happened at the end?
If you're listening to this episode and you haven't watched The Muse, which actually might be good, you deserve to be spoiled because this whole episode, the entire thing is a spoiler.
Right. I mean, so at the end of the episode, she shocks everybody by just beaming off the stage.
That's right. For some reason, so it's weird. B'Elanna Torres is an interesting character. She's kind of a hothead, right? Because she's half Klingon. Stereotypical, but hey, this is the character they wrote. Don't blame me. And so this playwright, who's kind of annoying, wants to ask her all these questions because he thinks she's an Eternal, which I guess is like their gods. Maybe not gods, but maybe like Olympians, which are gods. Kind of like Hercules is what I get. Not that they're gods, but that they are godlike. And so he thinks she's an Eternal and that she represents some new form of Eternal that no one's ever written about. So he's very excited because he has this patron and he needs to get his money, right? His sweet, sweet money to keep up his play company or whatever. And so he finds her ship crash-landed and takes it as an opportunity to keep her captive so that she will tell him stories of the Voyager Eternals. But before that, somehow he figures out, having never seen any technology, he figures out how to play back B'Elanna Torres' log entry and writes his little play that we see in the beginning of the episode based on those logs. And then he comes back and tries to get more stuff out of her. Which is a weird conceit for an episode. But they stick with it. This episode is a strange episode. So what did you think of the playwright character and B'Elanna's... Oh, the point I was trying to make is that throughout the episode, she's super annoyed with him. She decides, okay, I'm going to use him to get some dilithium crystals. And then by the end, when she decides that she's going to beam off, it becomes clear he has this scheme where his play is going to stop a war, but he can't think of an ending, so then he decides to kill off B'Elanna in the play, and B'Elanna hears about it, and she's very upset, so she goes to the play and then beams off, and averts a war, maybe?
Right. So, I mean, back to your question about what do I think of the playwright, I think he's not a very good playwright. I mean, B'Elanna has given him a lot of raw material to work with.
She is his muse.
Right. And yet he can't think of an ending to the play until she shows up. He seems incapable of sort of creatively putting a story together. So, I mean, you're left to wonder, aside from the Voyager series of plays that he's doing, what else has he written? How did he get a patron to begin with?
It
is unclear. And I do think, I don't know how much time he spent with B'Elanna. It's a bit, even though he couldn't think of a good storyline for the play, he really seemed to get into the nuances of the characters. He really nailed 7 of 9's dialogue.
He did.
You'll be assimilated. I will comply.
So I did a little research because that's the kind of podcast host I am.
Yes.
And by research, I went to Memory Alpha and read that entry. So apparently this episode won an Emmy for costume design. Which I guess fine, but I mention that only because they have these masks that are pretty cool, that somehow, and it's unclear, I guess B'Elanna details what 7 of 9 and Janeway and other people look like, because the masks, they have a person who's playing Janeway and they have a person who's playing 7 of 9, and they both have these bronze masks that look vaguely like 7 of 9 and Janeway. And I thought that was kind of cool. I did wonder how they could create these masks based on, I guess B'Elanna may have pictures so of them, maybe she showed them, I don't know.
And they might have been in the database, because they were looking at the database on the ship when they were, she was showing him the dilithium crystal. So she could have showed him, presumably, other crew members.
Which is kind of weird for B'Elanna to do that.
Well, no, I know, I'm just speculating.
No, but I think that's the only reasonable answer, right? But I guess you could say, I thought it was weird when I first watched this that B'Elanna was telling him all this stuff. But she was just using him, basically, because she needed... She crashes on this planet with Harry Kim. She stuffs Harry Kim in an escape pod before they crash, and she says, get out of here, Harry. Save yourself. Which is, never tell Harry Kim to save himself, because he'll screw it up, because that's what he did. But that's at the end of the episode. And then he saves the day, really. So she crash lands. Everything's messed up. And she needs dilithium crystals, and she needs... So she tells the guy, have you ever seen these things? She shows him a picture in the, what do they call it, the memory banks or something. He says, oh, it's a memory wall or something.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, those things, the, what do they call them, tears of the gods or something like that?
You know, I wrote it down, but now, oh, winter's tears.
Winter's tears, yes. And she says, I need some winter's tears. And he's like, well, I need some sweet, sweet play ideas. She's like, oh, fine, I'll tell you about Voyager, and then he goes off and gets her some dilithium, and then she tries to MacGyver it to power up the shuttle, and things blow up, and then she figures out that she needs some kind of metal plate for some reason. It's unclear why, but engineering. And so she's like, you gotta get me this plate, and he's like, I'll get you the plate, but you must tell me more of these Vulcans. He's very interested in Tuvok and Vulcans.
Right. That was the other character he really seemed to nail. it's hard to imagine what I know about B'Elanna's personality. It's hard to imagine her describing that kind of nuance in Tuvok's characters for him to have been able to write Tuvok so accurately.
Yes. B'Elanna strikes me as someone who would be annoyed by Tuvok generally and not get the great beating heart that is under the many layers of cold logic that
right.
he finds. But maybe B'Elanna tells him this, and the playwright figures and intuits that part of it, and that's where his genius comes in, quote unquote.
Oh,
genius.
So maybe he's good at characters, but just not really so much with the story arc.
Exactly. He doesn't know how to end anything, but he can get the characters together and have some conflict, and then he needs an ending. Although the pressure was on with that particular ending, because he needed an ending that would avert this war that was going to happen. And, well, as I said, it's unclear at the end if that actually averted the war or not. His patron seems quite impressed by B'Elanna Torres disappearing, but we do not find out if there is a war or not.
Right. I have a sort of a question that maybe I should know the answer to as a Star Trek fan. But the Universal Translator, is that what it's called?
Yes.
So I get when they're flying around in space and they meet other post-warp people.
Sure.
Maybe they have universal translators too, so you can just talk to them. But I was a little confused when they went to a pre-warp society. B'Elanna could understand them, which made sense, but how can they understand her?
I feel like the universal translator is never fully... It's one of those things that makes them... It's a convenient MacGuffin, right? It makes Star Trek work, because if you don't have it, you can't do anything. So I feel like there's probably some technical explanation. I think it's probably in the comm badge or something, and it's translating back and forth. I don't know. There is a great episode of Deep Space Nine that I cannot think of the name of, in which they meet an alien from the wormhole who comes, and the universal translator can't figure out the syntax. So they have to do a lot of figuring, you know, trying to communicate back and forth. So it's an interesting episode, but if they had to do it with every episode, it would be kind of annoying. So I guess the thinking is that the Universal Translator has so many languages in it that it can just kind of, on the fly, figure out how to translate your language, and then back and forth, automatically. This week, Random Trek is sponsored by Scout Alarm. That's right, we have a sponsor. And it is smart home security leader, Scout Alarm. It's a sleek, self-installed home security system for the modern renter and homeowner. And if you're anything like me, you've rented a bunch of apartments, and you've never wanted to invest in a security system. But luckily, Scout requires no long-term contracts or credit checks. It's month-to-month and hassle-free. And you can install an entire Scout system yourself in minutes and control it at any time, from anywhere, on your Apple or Android phone and smartwatch with Scout's apps. Now, the best part is, in the Scout app, you can monitor who's entering and exiting your home in real time, because you don't want the criminals to get you. You can arm and disarm your system right from the apps, and it integrates with your Nest, Amazon Echo, which I love. I have an Amazon Echo. If this, then that, which is a great service. If you're not using, check it out. Hue, I have Hue light bulbs, love them, or LIFX. And you can do all of this while keeping Scout online 24/7 with an optional 3G cellular backup plan. I know you want to know about the whole Scout system, so here's what it's composed of. There's a hub, that's the brain of the system. There's a door panel that can be armed and disarmed by a key fob, motion sensors that you can place everywhere, access sensors for anything that opens and closes, doors, windows, liquor cabinets, turbo lifts, Jeffrey's tubes, shuttlecrafts, you know, whatever. Scout is fully customizable. You can start with a hub and then only buy the sensors you need. Now, after that, if you're not already going to scoutalarm.com, I don't know what's wrong with you. But here's something to sweeten the pot. Our friends at Scout Alarm have given me a code, TREKKIE15, that's TREKKIE15. And when you use that and purchase more than $300 worth of devices on scoutalarm.com, you get 15% off your entire order. Fantastic. Scout Alarm. Sleek. Smart. Secure. scoutalarm.com. And now, back to the show.
I did think, and something I read... B'Elanna reads something in the alien language or something, which the Universal Translator doesn't translate written, so that it's like a big continuity error because B'Elanna couldn't actually read that. But
I actually missed that. I didn't notice that.
I read that somewhere. I don't know if that's actually true or not. But yes, this episode, very strange. And so my favorite part of this episode does involve Tuvok, though, because he stays up for 2 weeks, apparently. So they're gone for maybe, I guess, 2 or 3 months. No, 2 or 3 weeks, not yes. 3 months. And so Tuvok decides that he's going to stay awake and just figure out where they are, because that's what he does. And so he doesn't sleep for 2 weeks, and there's a scene with Neelix where he's like, oh, Mr. Vulcan, maybe you should go to sleep. And Tuvok's like, leave me alone, you're annoying, Neelix, which is true.
And then there's a scene where Tuvok is on duty in the bridge, and he's fallen asleep in the captain's chair, and it was just amusing. Although that is also odd, because Tom Paris is Belon Torres's... I don't know if... At this point, I think they're married. Maybe not. I don't know.
No, I just started watching season 6. So at the beginning of season 6, I don't think they're married yet.
They're going out.
Perhaps between that and the Muse, they got married. But yes, they're definitely going out.
They're an item.
Yeah. That's always bugged me.
The fact that they're together?
I think Belana could do a lot better. I mean, when you're on... How many people are on the ship? 150 or so?
Something like that. There's a small pool of people.
Exactly. So, if you know... And how long is it going to take them to get home? Like
a really long time.
So, if you're going to be stranded on a ship with 150 people for decades, perhaps you need to lower your standards. But...
Tom Paris is... I don't like a lot of characters on Voyager. Tom Paris is one of my least favorite characters.
Yeah, he and Harry Kim are... They're just a little too frat bro-y.
Yes. And I feel like Harry Kim... Tom Paris is a bad influence on Harry Kim, is what I feel like. I don't like Harry Kim. He's probably my least favorite character, just because he doesn't really do anything. I don't feel like he adds anything. At least Tom Paris, he does stuff. It may be stupid and annoying, but he's an active participant. I feel like Harry Kim is acted upon way too much. But in this episode, I found it weird. So they're going out, and they've been going out for a while. So they show the only scene where we see all the other main characters. They're in a meeting, and Tom Paris is... unhappy because they can't find B'Elanna. Makes sense. And he says, oh, I'll just go look for them myself, which everyone's like, well, that's a bad idea, Tom. Settle down. Then the meeting's over. And then the next time we see Tom Paris is in this kind of funny scene with Tuvok falling asleep, and Tom Paris is smiling because Tuvok's fallen asleep. But I'm thinking, would Tom Paris really be in such a kind of a jovial mood with his lady friend is lost and nobody knows where she is? I guess, you know, you do have to smile every once in a while, even if in that situation, but it just struck me as weird.
Yeah, I mean, he probably, well, I don't know. I've never lost my boyfriend on an L-class planet without communication, so I'm only speculating here, but mm-hmm. I would think, you know, the human psyche just can't be
dour the entire
right,
time.
Even if everything's very bad, like, you can't be dour for 2 weeks straight without cracking.
And you have to perhaps... find...
That was just what he needed at that moment.
And it was funny. Tuvok was snoring, and Tom Paris woke him up. And he was like,
Tuvok was watching an episode of The Muse.
That's right. He just kind of fell asleep.
Yeah.
He was hoping for a Deep Space Nine episode, but he got Voyager. Damn it. I do like Tuvok, since we're talking about Tuvok. He doesn't do much in this episode except fall asleep. What do you feel about Tuvok?
You know, I have no feelings about Tuvok.
That's very Vulcan of you.
It is very Vulcan of me. No, I mean, it's funny because sort of Voyager is divided into characters I really dislike.
Ooh.
So, you know, I have been watching them on Amazon.
You're rewatching Voyager in order?
I never watched it before.
Oh, okay.
And I picked Voyager. I mean, we can talk about that, but I picked Voyager for reasons.
Well, we're not going to talk about Muse that much, so we might as well.
And I confess, like, I will skip if an episode seems like it's going to be Harry Kim-centric or Paris-centric. I will skip that
so
one.
So you've skipped all the black and white holodeck episodes?
Actually, I like those.
They're fun.
They're fun, Captain Proton.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't like them. And then there's characters I really like. Like, you know, of course, the Doctor and Seven of Nine and Janeway. Mm-hmm. And then there's Tuvok. I'm neutral on him.
He doesn't... Well, they don't give him much to do. He's just kind of like, I'm Tuvok. I'm a Vulcan. Put me in embarrassing situations. And I'll help out. And that's about all that Tuvok does. But I like him. I feel like he was a missed opportunity. I feel like... And I've said this before. I feel like most of Voyager is a missed opportunity. But Tuvok in particular. How do you feel about Kes and Neelix? We haven't even gotten to talk about Neelix.
Well,
he is in this episode.
He is in this episode. Yeah, I mean, of course, obviously he's on the more irritating spectrum of characters.
Ooh, we should rank. I want to hear your rankings of Voyager characters from favorite to least favorite.
Well, favorite is Janeway, then the Doctor, then probably Seven of Nine, then I guess B'Elanna.
It seems like there's a steep drop there.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
B'Elanna's fine.
I like her.
She's sassy.
Right, she's sassy. Engineer.
She knows what she's doing.
Yep. And then probably, you know, I guess Tuvok. And then probably Neelix and Harry Kim and Tom Paris is my least favorite.
I will point out that you've left out a character.
Kes?
Well, yes.
She left. Who did I forget?
Chakotay.
Oh, right.
Who, I am not surprised forgot about him, but poor Chakotay.
I'm sorry, Chakotay. Yeah, you know what? Let's put him, I would put him sort of on par with B'Elanna.
Mm.
I don't dislike Chakotay. I like Chakotay.
I don't dislike Chakotay either. I dislike what they did with it, but I don't dislike him in general. I think that I've talked about this before with Chakotay-centric episodes, in that every Chakotay episode is like, oh, he's lucid dreaming, or he's visiting his ancestors.
Right, that's like the phony Native American.
Right, or he has a dream catcher for no reason. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting in this episode. There have been a couple episodes that I've watched, namely the one where he and Janeway are exiled to a planet together, presumably for the rest of their lives, so they speak, because they have some communicable disease that's not curable. And so the writers flirted a little bit with the idea of them getting together. And I see that theme recur sometimes, and then I thought it was interesting that it was written into the play.
That's right. The playwright decides, well, there has to be some romance in here, so Chakotay and Janeway are going to kiss. And B'Elanna's like, what? That is not going to happen. And there's always that little, will they or won't they? I think they have a good working relationship. It never struck me as there's a chemistry between the two in particular, but it never struck me as there was a lack of chemistry. It was just kind of like...
No, I don't think there's chemistry. I think it seemed like the writers were trying to make up their mind at some point about, you know, whether or not this would be a thing.
Can a man and a woman work together for so long and not have a romantic relationship?
Yeah, and they wisely decided to not make it a thing.
Yes. It was kind of like Moonlighting, right? Where, what's his face? And
Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd. Yes. I never watched that show.
Will they or won't they? And then they did, and it ruined everything.
I mean, but that's every sitcom ever.
It's true. Cheers. Same thing. Sam and Diane.
Friends.
Oh, yes. So thank you, Voyager, for not doing that. Also, I feel like, back to Janeway, but I feel like the writers, especially in the first season, didn't really know what to do with Janeway. And in that, they were like, well, should she be all business? Should she be super maternal? Should we give her an awful haircut for no particular reason? And like, no, you shouldn't. You should just let her tie back or whatever, but don't give whatever that big poofy space bun that she had the first season. Schoolmarm meets, I don't know what, 1950s beehive. But luckily, I think they figured that out with Janeway. And they figured out that Chakotay and Janeway should not.
Oh, Scott, if it was a male captain, would you be talking about their hair?
Well, Picard didn't have any.
Okay.
Sisko lost his. Sisko got much more interesting when he shaved his head and grew a goatee. Before that, not so interesting. And Kirk, I guess he does. Well, he did. He still does have hair. But that's the big question with Shatner, though. Is it his real hair or is it a toupee? We don't know. He does. Only Shatner knows. But I feel like if it were that haircut, that hairstyle was just so out of place that I think it was weird. And I feel like Ben Sisko, the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine, he looked weird because he doesn't have a goatee and he has a hair. That's not the Ben Sisko I know and love. He's bald and he has a goatee.
Okay. I mean, I've never watched Deep Space Nine, so I will take your word for it.
People listening who Deep Space Nine gets really good when he is bald and has a goatee.
Okay.
So watch for that when you're watching.
And so you feel that Janeway's character development is tied to her hairstyle?
I don't feel that, but I feel like they figured out that they didn't want her to at least look like a school marm. I felt like that wasn't the right look. I think they were trying to feminize her, maybe? I don't know. Also, and this is the true, I feel like every Starfleet captain joins Starfleet because they don't know how to dress themselves otherwise. Because Captain Picard wears lots of weird crap, and whenever, outside of his uniform, a lot of poofy blouses that he wears. And Captain Janeway also wears, she should wear whatever she wants, but every time they show her not in uniform, she's wearing, some kind of diaphanous gown of some sort, and it just strikes me as odd. But I guess if you're wearing a uniform, you want something opposite, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the styles in that century.
Well, that is true. Maybe diaphanous and poofy blouses is what's in, and I shouldn't judge. It's either you wear a jumpsuit or you wear the most flowy thing possible, which I guess is could be. So we haven't spent a lot of time talking about this episode because it's not very good. Spoiler alert. in case you haven't picked up on this trend. But I feel like we need to button it up. So B'Elanna basically uses this guy to get dilithium. It doesn't work. She gives him a whole bunch of information about Starfleet. Apparently doesn't care about the Prime Directive in any way.
Well, but she disguises it.
She does a little
bit. I mean, it's a ship.
Yes. She says she's an Eternal, which I guess is kind of a violation of Prime Directive because she's acting as though she's one of their gods. But we will allow it because she's trying to avoid tainting their society. So she's playing into what he thinks she is.
Right. Except at the end where she beams out.
Well, yeah, then she decides, well, all bets are off. I'm just going to beam off. Which is weird. And Harry Kim also thinks it's weird. But yeah, so B'Elanna's trying to get the subspace relay to work so she can send out a message and say, I'm not dead. Which makes sense. So that's her goal in this episode. She can't make it work through a variety of reasons. And then who comes along? Harry Kim. And Harry Kim has not used the escape pod to escape. Which is actually good, because he would be dead if he were stuck in that escape pod, because we find out on Voyager that it's taken them... They've been gone for 2 weeks, and you can only last for 10 days, I think, on the escape pod or something mm-hmm. like that. So Harry Kim decides, oh, I'm going to come back and look for B'Elanna. He lands 200 kilometers away, and he, not wanting to break the Prime Directive, walks to B'Elanna, but he only walks at night so no one can see him. Because he doesn't have anything weird on his forehead.
Exactly.
So he wouldn't blend in, I guess. Even though B'Elanna's forehead looks nothing like the other alien's forehead. But at least she has something weird on it. There's also a subplot where one of the actors is jealous that she thinks the playwright is in love with B'Elanna. But that doesn't matter. and so the Harry Kim shows up. He has a subspace relay that works, apparently. They hook it up and say, hey, Voyager, come get us. Voyager comes. Harry Kim is like, let's get the hell out of this planet because it sucks. And that's when somebody shows up and says, oh my god, the play is, there's no ending for the play. He sends a note. That's what she reads. The playwright sends him a note, her note.
Yes.
Saying, if you don't come, I'm going to kill B'Elanna Torres.
And the character.
The character, yes. And she's like, not on my watch. And Harry Kim's like, what does it matter? So this episode, I actually like Harry Kim because he has appropriate responses. He does, in fact, save the day. And he obeys the Prime Directive. So kudos to you, Harry Kim, in this episode. And B'Elanna's like, has this weird interaction where she's like, have you ever inspired anyone, Harry? And Harry Kim responds with, that's a weird question, which I think is a perfect response. And then B'Elanna's like, well, I'm leaving. Tell Voyager to wait for me. And then she goes off. And they improv some scenes. The chorus decides that they need to step in, and they break the fourth wall, and the patron gets involved. Everybody's very confused. B'Elanna beams up into the pearly heavens, or whatever she says, and then the episode's over.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good summary.
So, bad episode. Not good. I see what they were doing, what they were trying for. I appreciate it. I did like, in the beginning... the play, the super short play ends. The patron's like, I must see more of this story. And the playwright's like, well, I don't know what happens. And he's like, I hope you do, because I'm going to watch another episode next week. And I thought, oh, that's very clever, because Voyager is a weekly show, and that's funny. And then the guy's like, how about 2 weeks? He's like, no, I'll see you next week. So there were maybe three things I liked about this episode. That moment, Tuvok falling asleep, and Harry Kim coming and saying, that's an odd question. Those are my highlights. And the masks. Okay, four things I liked about it.
Yeah, I like the masks. I mean, I enjoyed his rendition of some of the dialogue.
Oh, sure.
Of the Voyager and Eternals. But yeah, that was maybe the only thing.
Those two things, masks and Voyager Eternal.
When I come home after a hard day of work and I want to watch Star Trek.
In the data mines.
I want to see, right, my hard day of work in the data mines. I want to see, you know, space and ships flying around. I don't want to see, like, a thing that's set entirely on a planet.
A pre-warp planet at that.
a pre-warp planet. And if it is going to be set on a pre-warp planet, I want it to be a little deeper than what we saw in this episode.
You want like their civilization to be on the line, or they have some kind of weird, or you know, that's a judgment, but an odd cultural thing that the Voyager crew has to help with, or they're in peril.
Right, or sometimes they're in a situation where the crew has to make a really tough decision about, like...
Should they interfere or not?
Right, because there might be terrible consequences if they obey the Prime Directive. Like, that's always an interesting conundrum to be in.
Yes.
But this didn't have any of that.
B'Elanna didn't care about the Prime Directive.
The only thing that I thought was interesting is, so now Voyager is a part of the culture of this pre-warp civilization. And previously, I think it might have been in this season, I watched a really interesting episode that I don't remember the name of. And it was Voyager gets sucked into orbiting a planet that is in a different... Their temporal juice is all off. This is... Someone's going to write a terrible letter.
That's fine.
But, so basically, their time is different from anywhere else in the galaxy in the quadrant. So Voyager shows up hovering over the planet. They're there for a couple of days, but every second is like years on that planet. And so like you could see their civilization evolve from a very ancient civilization, all the way up to something very modern, and they eventually get warp capabilities. In their time, Voyager's been there all along. So they built an entire civilization around what is this ship thing, this star that hovers. The star showed up one day.
Probably what inspired them to go investigate it, right? They want to go see it, so that's changed the whole course of their civilization.
Exactly. That's actually what's driven them to develop space capabilities. Then they wanted to develop space flight so they could go to the star and see what it was.
I think there are two things that Star Trek's really good at. Character interactions, which this one, kind of, but the problem is that there are two problems with this episode. They're not in space, and most of the characters that we know and love are not in this episode.
Yes.
So there's not much that we can sink our teeth into, right?
That's an interesting thought exercise. I mean, what if it had been, I don't know, Seven of Nine trapped down there?
It would be very different.
Actually, that's a bad example.
She would have punched that guy.
What about the Doctor? He appreciates the arts.
He probably would have stayed there and continued his life as a playwright and taken over, wrote the whole play, and made it an opera. Because he likes
to sing. He would have to have a singing role, yeah.
Yes. The other thing they do, big ideas and dilemmas. But this episode doesn't have either of those things. And so it's kind of boring. And there's no space.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all I have to say about this episode. I feel kind of bad.
Well, it's not a great episode. I would say it's a bad episode. So if you're listening all the way to the end, you could probably skip Muse. Unless you've watched it already. And then I'm sorry. But I'm not sorry that, Becky, you agreed to be on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Next on Random Trek, Voyager Season 1, Episode 3, Parallax.